Okay, we're back here in the Charity Charge studio. I have a special guest today, Bob Pearson, the CEO of Medic Alert Foundation. Thank you for being with us, Bob.
Glad to be here.
That's about as formal as we're going to get on this. So I'm still practicing kind of the intro, but really appreciate you being an early guest on the Charity Charge podcast.
Yeah, my pleasure.
You know, I know we've known each other for a number of years now, and I've always admired and appreciated the invaluable advice you've given to me as you were kind of with me when Charity Charge was just a concept, and it's always been good to reconnect. But I know that, you know, separate from your what you do for profit, we'll get into that in a second, you're very involved, obviously, as the CEO of Medic Alert Foundation. Can you tell us a little bit about what they do and what that organization's all about?
Yeah, it's actually a very simple premise. You know, nearly 60 years ago, Medic Alert Foundation was actually founded by a doctor in California. And the premise is basically what we call the Medic Alert moment is that moment where someone can't advocate for themselves. So they may have dementia. They may have a form of Alzheimer's. They may have severe epilepsy and have an attack or seizure rather. But there's that moment where you can't advocate for yourself. A first responder or someone else is trying to figure out what's going on. And if you actually have that non-technology innovation, which is the bracelet, you actually have enough information to go on and you actually know where to call to get more information. So we're in the business to give people security, but also to potentially save lives in certain situations.
And for people that are listening that might not be familiar with the organization at all, can you talk a little bit on a granular level what you mean by the bracelet and
Kind
of what the main mission or on yes. a practical level is and what you guys do day in and day out?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we live in a world where we are wearing Fitbits and Apple Watches and we have all kinds of data coming off us all the time. But sometimes technology is not always the answer, even though I believe in it deeply. And so what Medic Alert does is we give people either a bracelet, which you can just put around your wrist, or we have a necklace that you can wear. And on that piece of jewelry, it not only has your name, but it also has information about you. So it could be something as simple as you're allergic to XYZ. And so if you are incapacitated, people can see that right away. You can also have a number to call. So then if you call, you can get one of our team members on 24/7, and you actually can get more information about that person. In addition to that, let's say that someone has wandering around because they have advanced dementia. Well, if that person is picked up by a first responder, we can now get them home because we know who they are. But we can also, through our system, as we're called.
I've heard story after story, by the way, of that.
You where know, people just people wander.
Elderly people getting lost. Or
huge problem today. Huge problem. And it's, you know, there's all these, this is why I'm talking about this at South By, you know, the disparities in healthcare. We spend so much time and good time on how do we treat people? Can we get better care, better treatments? That's all great stuff. But we often forget about when someone's out of the office, what's happening. And that's one of those problems where someone's walking around and people think, oh, that's someone who's crazy. It's actually, no, it's someone whose brain isn't operating fully and need to be there to help them.
That's really powerful and great. I want to help me understand this and anyone listening as well. How did you get involved? Why are you of all the various, you know, nonprofits that are out there that you could be spending your time with? Why is this organization important to you and how did you get involved?
Well, I've been involved in healthcare since I was really 22 years old and right out of college. And so always gotten involved with nonprofits and cancer and Huntington's disease and other areas. But when I was approached about Medic Alert a number of years ago, what really hit me was how many people could benefit who have those moments and how few people actually know that those options exist. So when you see an unmet need in the marketplace, I think that's what drives most of us in this business is we realize, hey, we've got an obligation to give back. You know, I think giving back is, you do it in many forms. But one way is seeing an unmet need and just figuring out, I've got to find the solution. We've got to do a better job.
And one of the things I'm just curious to delve on a little bit too is what are some of the challenges that you guys face in growing, you know, your awareness, your mission? What kind of are, from where you're at today to where you guys want to go, what are the things that you're embarking on?
Yeah, it's when you do this well, there's a number of parts. It's kind of like a supply chain, right? So yes, we have to reach people so they know that they could be a member, but we have to make sure that the jewelry we create is not, it sounds kind of silly, but it's not too flashy. Because if it's too flashy, it might be confused for real jewelry. Can't also be too dull, because then no one wants to wear it. So we have to kind of, you know, grasp that. We have to make sure that our member service team, which, you know, answers the phone or email, is the best. And they do such a great job of not only just being there, but understanding what to do. Mm-hmm. So it's you're constantly thinking of like the supply chain of when this person needs us, are we ready? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, on top of that, we're always trying to raise awareness so we can, I just worry about people who just haven't heard about us that may have an asthma attack or something else where they could benefit.
Absolutely. So for anyone listening, I mean, it's pretty obvious that we all would have people in our lives that could really benefit from the foundation and the good work that you're doing with your team. I'm curious, I'm sure that you can't give an exact example or anecdote for privacy reasons, but could you walk us through potentially like a typical flow of how someone would get involved?
Yeah, sure.
In the sense of they say, imagine, you know, I'm a child and I have an elderly parent and I think this is great. How would that work all the way through potentially when they might have a moment where a first responder might get involved? You just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. And there's many reasons why, but first responders are really some of the heroes mm-hmm. in our world. And they often get very little credit. We don't talk about them a lot, but they're so important. And so in a typical example, let's say someone has a severe epilepsy. They have a seizure, but they're all alone. They're in it's a midnight. They're on a side street. It just happens. First responders there, they know right away and looking at the bracelet that this person has epilepsy. They know their name. They know the number to call. There may be a little bit more information. You can't put too much in mm-hmm. the bracelet, but they know enough now that they know what they're dealing with and they can take the right steps. Otherwise, they might think, oh, the person's just drunk or maybe something else is going on. So that's an example. You know, it could be a young child who also is just out playing. And maybe they're out on vacation with their family. They have an anaphylactic reaction to shellfish or something like that. But we already knew that they would. And so that information is there. And that first responder sees that as they're taking them away in the ambulance. So when you're dealing with people's lives, I mean, as you know, those seconds and minutes matter a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you talk a little bit about then the impact or kind of some of the numbers? I mean, this is a large organization in terms of the number of people served.
Yeah.
Any mention you can make about some of the metrics or kind of any of the numbers that might be interesting to people listening?
Yeah. So most people probably don't realize the Medical Air Foundation is a global organization. So we're not in all 190 countries of the world, but we're in a good 15 of them. And we expect that we'll grow more over time. We have several hundred thousand active members today. But when I look at that, there's 5.7 million people battling Alzheimer's now, you know, and if you go through each of the diseases and conditions where people might benefit, the real number of people who could benefit is probably north of 10 million. So we feel like we've got our work cut out. You know, I kind of wake up in the morning and say, okay, we're not doing enough. How do we reach these folks? And, I think that's actually one of the urgencies that anyone should have in the health business. To think that we're ever at the right place, I would never buy that, mm-hmm. you know? So there's, we've got a lot more work to do.
And what are the ways that you're currently pursuing and that you found to be successful in terms of growing the numbers, growing the awareness and getting more, you know, wristbands or necklaces on people?
Yeah. I mean, the best way is actually, there's so many excellent patient groups, for example, that are already doing a good job in reaching their communities. So the Alzheimer's Association is one of our lead partners and they're tremendous. They have a great network. They know how to reach people with Alzheimer's and caregivers. And so what we want to do there is how do you partner with them more effectively? If you look at any patient group, it could be, you know, from Huntington's disease, it could be an epilepsy group, it could be, you name it. And really our job is, can we be a good enough partner with them that we can actually provide support to their members? And in some cases, actually also help them at the same time raise money for research or education or other things they want to do because they have their own objectives in terms of, you know, furthering the goal.
Absolutely. Curious then, What is the sort of revenue model in terms of what gets your staff paid, keeps the lights on, allows you to perform your work? Is there any earned revenue that you receive, or are you raising money through grants from individuals, corporations, all the above? I mean, how does development and fundraising play into this to keep the lights on?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. Before, I mean, you and I are both very familiar with startups, and you're doing one yourself, you know, and I've done a number. And when you're doing a startup, you're not always thinking long term, I think. But when you're in the health business, you have an obligation to your members for their life and the next member's life. And so you have to build an organization that is sustainable for the long term. It's not about 2019 or 2020. Mm-hmm. So from a revenue model standpoint, that leads itself to having a membership fee, which we do. We do charge for the jewelry. We don't charge a lot. I mean, an average membership is like $50 a year.
Wow.
A bracelet might be somewhere in the $30, $40 range. So it's not a lot. But that being said, what do I worry about is, what about the people who can't afford it? Mm-hmm. And so this is where we have to do a better job of going out to companies to say, hey, can you sponsor a certain number of people getting bracelets in places where maybe they need it but can't afford it? And so you're always looking at that. But it's the whole idea is, you know, we have to be here in 2070. You know, you can't go away when you're part of someone's life.
No, absolutely, for sure. Do you see also, what I'm curious, since it's, I know you, I think, believe said it in the earlier part of this podcast, but approximately how long has the organization been around for?
It's been nearly 60 years.
Yeah. What's crazy, you know, kind of interesting, as you've been around that long, and then obviously have ambitions to continue to be around, is there's probably been a full life cycle to it. I mean, I can imagine someone that's 40 years ago at 40 getting it for their parent, but then they're 80, then they knew that it benefited themselves. So there's kind of maybe a little bit of built-in word of mouth or kind of referral type of marketing.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we don't know always exactly, but there are families, generations of people that have been using this.
Yeah.
You're absolutely correct. And, you know, it's interesting when you look back in like, you know, the 60s and 70s and 80s and now up to today, it used to be that a bracelet or a necklace was an innovative advance, and that was enough by itself. The ironic thing is, when you get into today's world, what I was saying earlier is it's still an advance because there is a limit to what technology can do. We would all love it if the iPhone or a smartphone would just pop up with all the information you need. But when you're actually having a problem, a medic alert moment, your code, what's your code? Well, if you're incapacitated, you can't give out your code. So the phone becomes a worthless item.
Sure.
So there's all these things that we have to think through. One of the exciting things, though, that we're doing is there's a company called Rapid SOS that we are partnering with, and they are actually looking at how to really change how accurate the 911 system can be. And through their technology, you can get down to, like, you know, I would say dozens of feet from where the person is, where before it used to be you would be within blocks of where the person is. Mm-hmm. Well, again, if you're trying to find someone who's wandering or is having a seizure or something like that, you want to be as close as possible. So their technology applied to the 911 system is going to help us significantly in terms of finding people quickly.
I appreciate you sharing that. And it's interesting, you know, the advances that are out there and, but also the low tech approach, but then, you know, how you can also partner with other organizations that can be a value add on top of what you're providing. I'm curious, we jumped in right away because a lot of this podcast is focused around featuring leaders of nonprofits and what they're doing, but you also have had a very long and successful career in marketing.
Right.
You know, in a variety of different ways, which I want to get to in a second. Maybe this is a way to transition. My question in a really practical level is, when you think of Medic Alert Foundation, you had mentioned that a lot of the growth comes through partner agencies. Like you had mentioned, for example, I believe the Epilepsy Foundation.
Yeah, or the Alzheimer's Association, right.
So are you doing other marketing, or are you how do you think about marketing for a nonprofit, I guess, versus marketing for like a traditional corporate client of yours?
It's pretty similar. I mean, you know, we do a lot of direct mail and email. So, you know, there you're reaching people directly with the information they need because you want to make sure they have it. When you're looking at new members, digital outreach is one of the better ways to reach people, often through search, sometimes through social media. In fact, we even just did an ad recently on Spotify.
Wow.
Because we want to be reaching folks who are younger, who may be considering a MedAlert. So using all the digital tools that we know are absolutely applicable. And but again, I go back to the organizations that already work with the patient groups that we know. That's arguably the most powerful, because that's what they do every day, is they build great networks with the people who really need the help.
That's really smart. I mean, that you found a strategy and that you're being able to work with groups that are directly in touch with the end decision maker or consumer, and can, you know, and then you become a value add for that.
It's always a team, right? In healthcare. Right. I think that's what sometimes gets forgotten, but it's like, none of us are good unless we all work together, you know? And so when we look at that, it means we have to be working with patient groups well. We have to understand how insurers work and how we fit in there. We have to be understanding how to work with first responders and medical providers. You have to understand the needs of caregivers. So if you really understand that health ecosystem, you start to see how you can be increasingly relevant, but not overstep your bounds. You know, knowing your place in the ecosystem is also very important.
No, absolutely. It's kind of interesting, as I've continued to meet and learn and speak with so many different nonprofits, I found that the most successful are the ones that understand where they fit in,
right.
Understand their boundaries, but also look at the world as a 1 + 1 = 3, as opposed to an approach of like a zero sum game when it comes to fundraising or awareness or things. I mean, there are a handful of nonprofits out there and leaders that kind of want everything for themselves versus figuring out how, if they're a mission driven organization, they can add value by, through collaborative efforts.
Right.
But
this is where it's like, it is the same as business, because if you're in business, we say that the customer is always right. Mm-hmm. And whatever the customer wants, like, we're going to figure out how to do that. Well, in this case, the member's right. Right. And so the only person that matters is that person that we serve, and whatever we can do to improve their lives, then that's what we should do. Anything short of that, anything that is just cool for us to do, who cares? It's totally irrelevant, And I think the other thing you're getting at is there's a lot of different ways to give. This is one of the reasons why I like Charity Charge, is because you're giving people another option with all the flow that they have for their organization.
By the way, Bob is doing this on his own. I did not.
Yeah, he did. No prompts. No, but it's true. I really believe it. There's all these flows that are occurring, and you're giving people a chance to do something about it in a positive way. And, I think that's when you look at the whole ecosystem, you see these gaps where you say, wow, there's not really a credit card that people could be using that would give back. And of course, you're solving that problem.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I mean, my kind of macro trend on this topic in general is that when you look at nonprofits, generally speaking, look at individuals not as consumers, which is what they are 365 days of the year. I mean, they're out, their everyday life is focused around consumerism. They need to buy food, groceries, they need to buy clothes, they need to pay for gas, they need to pay for travel, all that stuff. Instead, nonprofits generally just look at them as funders, as donors. Mm-hmm. But the reality, when you look at it, is the average person, individual, is donating once, maybe twice a year. It's not this everyday aspect.
Yep.
And so Charity Charge at least is trying to figure out how can nonprofits instead look at people for who they are 365 days a year, which is, and then match consumerism, the act of buying things, with the act of making a donation and make it automatic.
Yeah.
So it's just a little bit of a different mindset shift. But it's been really interesting for me as I continue to interact with so many different nonprofits, how they don't look at people for who they are and what their day in and day out habits are. They want to change them. They want to force them to attend their race. They want to force them to give on a specific day. And that's why you see so much drop off in terms of donor engagement, right? I mean, I'm talking in broad terms here, but the figure is roughly 50% when you look at it on average of individuals that drop off. So, a nonprofit direct mails them or through whatever means gets them to give $100, but the next year, half of those people aren't giving again.
Wow.
So just a huge drop off. And it's just interesting when you think about consumer psychology of, like, it's better to ride the momentum and put yourself in an area where the consumer behavior is already doing that rather than force them to change their behavior, because they're never going to stick with that for the long term. They're always going to revert back to what their behavior
is. You're making me think of something from the past too. When I was on the Huntington's Disease Society of America board and eventually became chairman of the board for a brief time, we always had a patient with Huntington's disease on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing more powerful than trying to make decisions on what to do with the resources and time you have than to have someone in active disease looking at you. And you realize that you're not moving quick enough. You got to make sure you're totally accurate in what you do. You in a good way, second guess yourself to make sure you're making the right decisions. And man, does that focus you. And I found that you do the same thing, even if you're not fortunate enough to have someone from the community on your board or in the meeting room with you, you got to pretend they're there. So if we're making decisions for Medical Alert Foundation, we're imagining that the people who we serve are in the room with us. And if they would agree with what we're doing, then we're in good shape. But that prevents you from, you know, kind of having these out-of-body experiences where you forget that we're actually just dealing with human beings and we're trying to help people who need us.
That's amazing. I truly mean it, actually. That's an amazing perspective to think about. I, moving forward, will constantly think about is the nonprofit
is the
in the room
person because right here, right?
Something that we've really learned with our small team, and this just came up on Monday. Abby, who works with me side by side, serving all the nonprofits with Charity Charge, she was mentioning how our bank partner, Commerce, and they've been terrific, but they were slow on doing one aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, we can bug and we can do it," but I said, mm-hmm. "Have the nonprofits that you're dealing with, have they complained about this?" She said, "No, they don't." I said, "All right, then we're going to put that on the back burner because our end customer, our client nonprofit's not telling us that it's a problem. We've got other things that we need to focus on. Not that we couldn't, but if it's a little bit of a nuisance for you, I need you to put up for it a little bit longer internally. But thankfully, it's not a nuisance for the end customer or client that we're trying to serve."
Yeah, there's a responsibility that's inherent in anyone doing nonprofit work. That is more than in a business, in my view. And, you know, another quick story related to that mm-hmm. is years ago, I was part of a team that we eventually launched the first drug for Lou Gehrig's disease. And there was a time where a gentleman had called me on the phone. He wanted to meet. And then he surprised me. He drove up from Baltimore. He lived in Maryland, where you're wow. from, and drove to Pennsylvania. And he came into the lobby. And he asked to see me. So I brought him up to my office and he came in and I didn't know him at all. He's just like a normal business person. He asked me all these questions about what we were doing in Lou Gehrig's disease. And then he stopped and his wife has the disease. And he said, "I'm comfortable now. I know that you're going to do everything possible. I've done my job. Thank you. And I'm going to go home now." And he left. I never talked to him again, but it was like, so I never forgot it. And it's always made me think, like, are we really doing enough? Because people are counting on us, right? And I think, like, if a bank takes too long or someone takes too long or anyone gets in the way, it's like, no, you're preventing us from making a difference in people's lives, or you're slowing it down, and we've all got to speed it up, you know? And I think that if that urgency never leaves, it is analogous to an entrepreneur who feels the urgency to succeed. But it's a lot different when you know that human beings' lives are at stake, you know?
No, absolutely. It's actually a really interesting perspective when I think of the variety of groups that, you know, I've interacted with versus what you're doing and the life and death, you know, perspective of literally, you know, your mission is all about with Medical Alert. I'm curious then also, though, because I think it's a really interesting perspective. Do you mind talking just a little bit about my understanding, I know about, you know, kind of your career from Dell on,
right?
You maybe want to start there or not, but can you talk a little about what, you know, you've pursued career-wise and maybe touch on pre-commerce? I mean, I know that was a number of years ago, but it's interesting how that's played out to be really true.
Yes, exactly. So very, very quick start is I started out in communications. And early on, started work in healthcare. In fact, my first year of working, worked on a biotech company, working on interleukin-2 for cancer. And it kind of got hooked. It just made more sense to be more focused on health. And so I worked in the pharmaceutical industry for years as a head of communications. I was at Novartis over in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And what I was learning there was the importance of how the healthcare system works. I was also always interested in technology, and I was always interested in how humans work, you know? And so now you fast forward to Dell. And after Dell, I started to realize like, hey, there's the world has changed enough. We can actually apply these concepts into what we now call digital marketing and communications. Back then, we weren't saying those words. And that became that first book, which was Pre-Commerce. So I wrote the book Pre-Commerce really as a roadmap for
if someone's listening, clients. By the way, I assume they can find it on Amazon, or what would be the easiest
Amazon.com. Okay. Yes, they can definitely find all the books there.
So Pre-Commerce by Bob Pearson.
Yes. Yep. And it's meant to be a roadmap for our clients and ourselves on how is the digital world changing and what can we do about it so we can make a bigger impact. You know, because it's still the same stuff we were talking about before is if you are doing the same things you did forever in communications and marketing to try to reach people in the same ways, it becomes decreasingly effective. So again, if you go back to, we have to reach people with this disease, we're trying to reach people with a rare disorder, it's incumbent on us that we're using the latest techniques so we reach them more effectively.
Totally.
Right? Now, we also use those techniques in technology and consumer and other places, but health is a big driver of doing that. And then, you know, Storytizing was the next book after that, which was a continuation. In each case, I try to write books.
I need to get that one. I don't have that one.
Oh, I think I'll get you a copy.
Will you sign a copy
for me?
It'll
be on the way to you.
Thank you.
And,
wow, really? That's awesome.
Each book I try to write like about 3 to 4 years ahead of where the market is. Mm-hmm. And so what you see with pre-commerce is like it's very topical today. I mean, that came out in 2010. Mm-hmm. You know, Storytizing came out in 2015, I think. Mm-hmm. It's super topical today. But that's the idea is how do you use techniques to reach people more effectively? And these answers are right in front of us. We just have to learn what to do.
That's really amazing. Let me touch on something too, since with getting back to MedicAlert for just for a second here.
Yeah.
In joining the organization, where is it based? Because it must be a really a collaborative effort. Since again, yeah. You just mentioned you're in approximately 15 countries. You're here yeah. in Austin. You've got people working for you all over the country.
Yes.
How has that gone? I mean, most of the nonprofits are centralized.
Great team. Yeah. Yeah. And we are spread out. So our headquarters is in Salida, California. We're actually moving to Turlock in about a month, which is the original headquarters of MedicAlert. So we're kind of going back to the future. Great team there. It's where our member support center is and a lot of our infrastructure team, finance, IT. And then our president in our marketing team and communications and those areas are in New York. So right in Manhattan. And then I'm in Austin. And, you know, today's world doesn't matter. Right?
Yeah, it's really, really incredible.
Yeah.
What are ways if people want to get either involved for themselves or an individual as kind of an end consumer of the bracelets or necklaces, or they want to support financially, where should they go? What should they
yeah.
do?
The best way to do it is go right to medicalert.org and you can go in there and you can become a member. You can pick out the jewelry that may make sense for you, meaning a bracelet or necklace, and you can donate. And in fact, we'll probably by the time this comes out, we'll have a brand new website up. So it'd be a pretty clean experience.
That's awesome. Well, look, I hope to have you on future podcasts so we can focus more on the intricacies and nuances of marketing for nonprofits and organizations. But I really appreciate, Bob, you coming on today to talk about MedicAlert Foundation. I think what you guys are doing is really obviously well needed and really something that really could benefit so many people. So if you're listening, I really encourage you, if you have a loved one that's elderly or has any sort of epilepsy or any sort of allergic situation, to get them a bracelet or a necklace and get them involved with MedicAlert.
Thank you, Stephen. And look, if we have one or two new people who benefit from this, the podcast was worth it.
Awesome.
Right.
Well, thank you so much. Appreciate you coming on.
Great. Thank you.